Welcome back to Uprising. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. It's official. Marriage is legal. The United States Supreme Court this morning ruled 5-4 that under the United States Constitution, same-sex marriage is a national legal right. Justice Anthony Kennedy, breaking the deadlock, sided with his liberal colleagues and wrote the majority opinion. Last year, the court had issued a mixed ruling on several cases and essentially avoided making a definitive decision. It is fitting that the court's decision comes just before the 46th anniversary of the Stonewall riots on June 28, 1969. New York police raided a popular gay bar in Greenwich Village called the Stonewall Inn. That raid and the resistance to it sparked a major movement that is considered the birthplace of the modern American gay rights movement. On Tuesday of this week, just days ahead of the 46th anniversary of the Stonewall riots, the city of New York declared Stonewall an official landmark. It's the first time that the city has dedicated a monument to LGBT rights. Letitia James, a public advocate with the city, said the Stonewall Inn, quote, must be protected against rapacious developers who would destroy the history of the sacred place and all it represents. My guest is Dorothy Benz. She is the communications director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. Welcome to Uprising, Dorothy.
Hi, it's great to be here on such a great day.
Such a historic and momentous day. We didn't expect the ruling to come down just ahead of our conversation. First, I just want to ask you to express your thoughts. I was sort of tongue-tied this morning, tears of joy. How did you feel?
It was not unexpected. You know, the legal winds have been going in this direction for a while, and yet, I was completely overwhelmed for a couple of minutes, even though it was expected at this point. I'm very happy. I'm very glad that this piece of the journey for gay rights is over. And when I read Kennedy's closing line, you know, they ask for equal dignity in the eyes of the law. The Constitution grants them that right. It's hard not to get choked up when you read that. And at the same time, it's such a moment in history, and as you say, so fitting in the coming right before the Stonewall anniversary. And yet, I can't help thinking about Reverend Pinckney right now and his funeral today, and the distance between that atrocity and that hate and this moment of love. It's just overwhelming.
I'm so glad that you brought up Reverend Pinckney. You know, this has been an issue that has often been put on the shoulders of religious leaders, that people have used religion to justify the denial of marriage. Near the end, it became about children and children's right and how somehow the raising of children was the prime reason why marriage existed. Do you think that in the end, the Supreme Court simply saw through all of that and realized that the moment that we're in today with the public opinion on marriage changing so dramatically that they just would not have been able to get away with, I guess it would have been Anthony Kennedy, wouldn't have been able to get away with a no vote?
I think in the end, I'd like to say it's a secular society and we are a nation of laws and not a theocracy, although sometimes I wonder about that. But I think in the end, the strength of the legal argument that we are protected under the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment was just unavoidable. And it is true that religious bigotry in this country is significant and is the significant force that's holding back rights for LGBTQ people. And yet the Constitution exists and legal scholarship exists and and I think it was unavoidable for them. I don't think they would have taken the case if they didn't know that they had to finally walk this road.
So this issue now, I mean, I don't, you know, it's so new, so the legal ramifications are far and wide, but 36 states, in the absence of a federal Supreme Court ruling, 36 states already legalized marriage. Does this ruling now mean that it doesn't matter whether a state or not has legalized marriage in the eyes of the federal government, it is legal? Or is it the case that those people living in states where marriage is still not legal can simply file federal taxes as a married couple, but not state taxes? Do you know what the ramifications are?
I don't actually know. I haven't read the ruling itself, and I'm not actually a lawyer or a legal scholar, so I don't want to overstretch what the actual specific immediate logistical implications are. But it is clear that the highest court of our nation has ruled that we have an equal right to marriage to all couples. So whatever the implementation is, we will be able to get married everywhere. And I've seen accounts of people having long lines at city clerk's offices looking for marriage licenses. So I think we're off to the races already, but I don't want to overstep my knowledge.
Sure, and we will certainly try to bring more details of that on this program as the details of the ruling and the decision that was written. We have more time to look through that. And also briefly, how does the U.S. now compare to the rest of the world? I mentioned 36 states in the U.S., but there are many countries around the world that are turning in this direction as well in terms of making marriage legal, right?
Yes, I don't know how many, but it's a growing number. We're certainly not first in the pack. That's no longer surprising, but there are a growing number of nations. And I believe that earlier this month, the United Nations also called for the decriminalization of homosexuality worldwide, which, you know, apart from marriage as a right, there are so many other legal rights and social rights and economic rights that LGBTQ people need to have and in most places don't have. For instance, it's an irony, but true, that right now, I may be able to get married. Actually, I am married, but I may be able to get married in 50 states in this country. But in 31 of them, I believe it's 31, I could still be discriminated against in employment and housing.
Well, how important is the symbolism of this decision? Because you're right, beyond the issue of marriage, there are many other issues and avenues of discrimination. Isn't the legalization of gay marriage nationwide also a symbolic issue that now you have a right that straight folks take for granted? And this is a symbolic step in simply the fact that we're all human. You're right. I mean, that this is, you know, it can be ticked off the list, but also hopefully have ramifications in people being able to be seen as equal in everyone's eyes.
I think that that's true. I mean, it's true in a number of ways, and it is more than symbolic. There are a lot of legal rights
right. Caught
up with being able to be married, you know, whether that's visitation rights in a hospital or inheritance rights or, you know, any number of things that straight folks do take for granted. But the equal protection argument, I mean, again, I'm not a legal scholar, but I don't understand why it's not a very short jump from saying that we're protected for the purpose of marriage to saying we're protected for the purposes of everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, if we have rights under the law that say you can't discriminate against us because we're gay, then those should extend everywhere. And I think I hope that we'll see a renewed effort to finalize and pull through other civil rights for LGBTQ people. And I also hope that we will focus more intently on the crises that are so far removed from marriage that the more marginalized and younger and more vulnerable members of our community face day in and day out. I'm thinking about bullying in schools. I'm thinking about homelessness for queer youth. I'm thinking about the epidemic of hate violence that affects mostly queer people of color, and particularly trans women of color. Those are huge pressing issues for our communities. And I hope that this moment of love wins will help extend the fight in those directions.
And speaking of trans women of color, a very important event took place this week when an undocumented trans woman named Genesette Gutierrez heckled President Obama during a White House event on LGBT issues, and he cut her down snarkily, saying it was his house and the drinks and the food that she was consuming, and she was escorted out. But she was demanding that the president and the government stop detaining and deporting LGBT undocumented immigrants. And I'm wondering what you make of that encounter and how immigrant rights intersect with LGBT rights. If marriage is now legal, then the same-sex marriages that people have between U.S. citizens and, say, undocumented immigrants might give those immigrants a right to apply for green card, as straight couples have been able to do.
They should. It should enable that to happen, for sure. And, you know, I feel... I feel bad for the president when he gets heckled, especially since he gets heckled so much in a racist way. Mm. But I have to say, in this case, he deserved it. It's not the most pleasant of interactions, but making your voice heard is a time-honored tradition in our country, and it needed to be said, because there are issues that LGBT immigrants face that are not being addressed in immigration reform and in the discussions around immigration around our country. Trans women are usually detained along with males. LGBTQ people are often put in solitary confinement in immigration detention, allegedly for their own benefit. Asylum laws need to be updated and, you know, to protect the very real threat that people face. There are tons of issues that affect our community, and immigration is absolutely a queer issue. Just like racism is a queer issue, and classism is a queer issue, and ableism is a queer issue. We queer people, we come in all stripes and colors, from all backgrounds and all colors, and all those issues of justice are our issues.
Now, let's talk about the fact that it is the 46th anniversary of the Stonewall riots this week. And this has been the Stonewall riots 46 years ago. And the organizing that came out of that was seen as such a crucial chapter in the fight for gay rights. Can you tell us, can you put it into context, the historical context of why Stonewall became so important, why it's called the birthplace for gay rights?
It definitely deserves that title. It's a little hard to know why that day was different. I mean, in some ways there are explanations for it, and in some ways there are not. But Stonewall started, what we call the Stonewall riots or the Stonewall rebellion, started as just another bar raid. Bar raids were common in that time. The Stonewall itself was raided approximately every 2 weeks. And throughout the country, people, you know, faced bar raids all the time in towns and cities. And there were some places where, you know, the town newspaper would publish the names of the people arrested. And in those days, that meant an end to your life, almost, you know, because it went a certain loss of job, it meant an almost certain loss of family. It was the sort of airtight stigmatism and complete ostracization that known homosexuals faced is almost unimaginable to us today. And that's the era in which Stonewall happened. But what happened on that night was somehow different, because when the cops pulled up and they pulled up their paddy wagon and they started clearing out the bar, instead of scattering, everybody in the street kind of gathered in a crowd. And then, you know, who knows what the final spark was, but some cop pushed a drag queen a little bit too hard and she swung back and boom, you know, the match that lit the fire was somehow ignited, and it turned into 2 nights of solid rioting and another 3 nights of an uneasy semi-rioting and then a sixth night of rioting again, and, you know, newspaper coverage, and all of a sudden people were shouting gay pride, gay power, in, you know, something they'd never done. No one had ever fought back.
And how did the sort of violence of the raid and people's resistance to it then spread far and wide beyond New York? How was this such a seminal event? Was it that people hadn't really, you know, fought back physically, particularly against the police, which, as we know, even till today, is a very dangerous thing to do. When a cop hits you, to hit a cop back is pretty much, you're guaranteed spending the night in jail and then probably being charged with assault. A police officer. Was it the courage of that lashing back and standing up for oneself, something that rippled far beyond New York?
It's, I think it was partially the historical moment. And I want to take a moment to also acknowledge that there was tremendous courageous efforts that happened before Stonewall. Mm. You know, it's not like the first activities and the first actions and the first fight back ever occurred there. But what came before had been an effort to fit in and to assimilate and to appeal to our common humanity and all those things. And suddenly in that night, it changed. And part of what made it happen was that it came in the context. It was 1969. You had the civil rights movement, you had the black power movement, you had the anti-war movement, you had the women's movement, you had the new left, the counterculture, the hippies, and all those things provided inspiration. They provided models, and they provided some infrastructure too. And they provided, you know, it was an age of rebellion in some ways. And so when that spark finally happened, it fired the imagination, and people, you know, people who had heard black is beautiful were capable of saying gay pride, you know, in a way that wouldn't have been possible without that. So the movement that came out of Stonewall absolutely stands on the shoulders of all of those movements that came before and that so inspired us in the 1960s. And then after it happened, those same movements also provided essentially a substitute infrastructure for people, because some of the leaders that came out of Stonewall were people that were already active in New Left organizations, and they had networks and they had skills. And, you know, and within a few weeks you had the Gay Liberation Front, and then a few weeks hence from there you had the Gay Activist Alliance. And those things were possible in part because so many queer people were already mobilized and politically active in those other movements.
And how important is it for the Stonewall Inn to be recognized as a landmark this week?
It's entirely appropriate, and it's a wonderful move. And coming together with the other great news from this week, it just fits. I mean, it's important, first of all, because we have to remember our history, and that's where it happened. That's where this all went down, and it is probably the single most transformative event in LGBTQ history. And the Stonewall has also been, since that time, the place that people gather spontaneously when something happens. I would be very surprised if it were Sheridan Square in front of the Stonewall right this minute as you and I are speaking, were not full of queer people, you know, hooting and hollering and shouting and drinking and crying and celebrating this moment. I know that I was there the day that Lawrence v. Texas was decided, the case that overturned the sodomy laws. And I know I was there on June 24th, 2011, the day that New York State legalized marriage. You know, and I was one of thousands, and nobody sent out a notice that said, let's all gather at the Stonewall. People just showed up there. So it has resonance. It has resonance. And it is the first landmark to be designated primarily because of its interest and significance to LGBT history, which is also important. But it's absolutely the right mark.
Dorothy, finally and very briefly, as we look ahead to other issues, I know that aside from the Supreme Court ruling on gay marriage this morning, there are other cases pending as well, both on the international stage and at the domestic level. Internationally, there is a law that there is a challenge to the perpetrator of Uganda's extremely harsh homophobic law that essentially sentences or can sentence members of the LGBT community to death. And there's also a New York challenge to the impact of stop and frisk by the NYPD on LGBT folks. Can you just give us a very brief update on what these cases are about and why they're important?
Absolutely. Internationally, what has happened is that as rights have been growing in this country, the extremists here have taken their hate show on the road. They have exported their homophobic agendas elsewhere, to Africa and Eastern Europe and places like that. And Scott Lively is one of the worst of the bunch. He's basically a one-man persecution consulting operation. And in Uganda, he did help pass that law. He did advocate for that law, and he has worked together with people there to clamp down on gay rights and gay expression in our very existence. The law, just incidentally, the final law that passed did not include the death penalty. It was still extremely draconian, and it was invalidated on a technicality. But the damage is done, and his role in, you know, basically fomenting hate, which is under international law persecution and has been recognized as persecution by a court. That case is proceeding. It is far from done, but it is proceeding. And meanwhile, in New York, stop and frisk policies, which most people know, target black and brown New Yorkers. They also target trans New Yorkers and gender nonconforming people, and CCR, the Center for Constitutional Rights, won a landmark case against the NYPD in 2013 about stop and frisk. And we are now in the process of ramping up a reform process that the judge ordered that requires affected communities to be involved. And so those do include LGBTQ communities as well as people of color in New York. And that process is really just getting underway. We'll be telling people about both on Sunday at the Pride March, where CCR will be proudly marching along with thousands and thousands of other jubilant New Yorkers.
I can only imagine what that day is going to look like. Dorothy, thank you so much for sharing these thoughts with us. And I'm sure you're going to be celebrating tonight, maybe all weekend, as will I.
I certainly will. Thank you so much.
Dorothy Benz is the communications director of the Center for Constitutional Rights. If you haven't heard, marriage is now legal. We can stop calling it gay marriage and simply call it marriage. This is Uprising. When we come back, we'll take a look at another anniversary, the 70th anniversary of the signing of the United Nations Charter. Stay tuned.